Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Up the Poshcast. They're coming thick and fast at the minute. It's been another busy fixture schedule over the Christmas New Year period. Today, we're recapping the Burton game. 2-2 draw. Posh coming from 2-0 down to scrape a point against lowly Burton. Ash, I'll go to you first. We'll get straight into dissecting the game. What did you make of it?
Do you know what? It was actually probably a little bit of breath of fresh air that they've managed to pull back a two-goal deficit, because Burton, when they came to us obviously a month ago, they sort of sat back, they defended, they got their goal, and then they held on to it. So when we conceded the second, I was really concerned because I thought they were just going to completely sit off us, let us move the ball around. So I'm not going to say that I'm happy with us drawing against bottom of the league, but I said to somebody as we were walking out the ground, when I look back to last year, we lost to Carlisle at home. We drew to Carlisle away. So that's now two seasons running that we have had those results against the bottom team in the league. Obviously, there's lots to improve on. And we've gone with a five at the back and all three at the back, depending on which way you want to look at it, and still managed to concede two goals, which realistically, it wasn't like we've been... I don't think there was any errors today. It didn't feel like there was. So obviously disappointing in that sense. But you know, good to sort of not start the year with a loss, that's for sure, because it sort of feels like it stopped that rot that we had for three games on the bounce and losing them all for definite.
I mean, you say there wasn't any errors, Ash. There wasn't any glaring mistakes, I guess. But for me, it was the same old errors that were coming up. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about defence because we know they're not good enough. I think Ferguson readily admitted that in his post-match press conference. But for me, Oscar Vallon losing a man at the back post, that goes down as an error for me. It's an error that he's been making all season. It's the basics of defending. It's not giving a ball to a striker. It's marking up from a cross. And these guys just seem incapable of doing it. But we've been fairly negative in recent weeks, and understandably so. Posh haven't given us much to cheer. I do think they deserve a modicum of credit today. It would have been very easy to go under at 2-0 down, given our run of form, given the way the fans are sort of, they're on the turn. It feels like they're teetering on the precipice of becoming really toxic at this point. And I don't blame people necessarily for that, but I thought the players showed a decent amount of character to get through and sort of come back and turn it around. Because like I said, I think the easiest thing to do would have been to go, shit, we're poor at the back again. We've stuck two in our own net within the first 20 minutes. Let's just give it up. And they didn't do that. And that was to their credit. I thought the performance was much better than the home performance against Burton. Look, the result isn't great. It wasn't an amazing performance, but I was happy that Ferguson... last episode, I said about him just going away from passing football and going long ball, and I hated it. I'm pleased we went back to passing football today. We're better for it. We looked much more of an attacking threat because of that. And yeah, if you want to focus on the positives, and look, there isn't too many you can take out of a draw with bottom of the league. I do think that the players deserve a degree of credit for just coming back and showing a bit of character. There was enough fight in that team and actually enough quality. I think what I am seeing, and those that are worried about a relegation battle, I can totally understand it. And if we keep defending like we are, then we are in trouble. However, when we've come up against Burton away, when we've come up against Northampton away, we might not be picking up positive results at the minute. But if you look at the football being played, you can see there is a marked difference in quality with what we have compared to them, at least. And I think that is the one positive that you can probably take.
I think very clearly watching the game today, it was two poor teams, which you expect to be down the bottom of the table from the quality of the game. Do you know what I mean? Normally, when you have two good teams together, you can tell they're at top of the table. This, you could tell, was down the bottom of the table. Burton were awful. We wasn't very good, but we accept where we are at the moment. Although, as you said, we was a bit better today than we have been in recent weeks. I think it was unfortunate to go two down. I'm a bit with both you and you, John, and Ash. Whilst they weren't glaring mistakes, it's the basics that we let go. Again, we're still letting the ball bounce at the back. You know, the basics of put your fucking head through it. You know, don't let the ball bounce. I don't know why we're allowing it to happen so many times. But, you know, we conceded two goals. And even their second goal was fluky, but the luck just ain't going our way. The ball was down the right-hand side. We won it. It bounced off them, bounced back to us, bounced back to them. They crossed it in, goal. You know, the luck ain't really going with us. And you do need a bit of luck in football. So, yeah, it was better. We wasn't shit. I actually think we was all over them, if I'm honest, without too much skill. Because they were really, really poor. The highlight was, as you say, pulling a back a two-goal deficit because we haven't been able to have that fight of late. So, yeah, coming away with a point after being 2 down, after being so, you know, so early on, 2-0 down, you know, a bit of credit to them for a change. So, yeah, there was positives, but, you know, we really can't be, you know, getting too excited that, oh, we're turn a corner because we've got a long way to go yet.
Yeah, I sort of just wanted to follow on from what you said there, Del, and like it really does sum up our luck at the moment, doesn't it? In that I think it was 3 or 4 times that we've attempted to clear the ball or kick the ball away or kick the ball out, and all of a sudden it drops to their player and he takes a touch and puts the ball in. And like you said, John, we're switched off. So yeah, maybe I am wrong. Maybe there are errors. Maybe I'm not expecting enough, but I think it's that 45 goals now that we've conceded in the league. Maybe I don't bother expecting anything. Expect the worst and you won't be disappointed. So that's probably where I'm at the moment. Sort of on that point of luck, I feel a little bit aggrieved for Kean Hayes today. It wasn't his strongest point performance, but to sort of be chucked in at left wing back, it felt really unfair on Fergie's behalf, especially when you look who was at right wing back and that we had a defender there. I was disappointed with Hayes' performance, but not because of where he was playing, just that he couldn't do the things that he is good at. And once he then switched into the right wing position where he can cut in and do the stuff that he's good at, his performance did improve. But unfortunately, it felt like the damage was already done from his point. And he does sort of need 10 attempts to run with the ball and get at the defender before it works. Especially when you play the five, you don't really get like overlaps and underlaps with them as well. So, you know, I wasn't on the last recording after Barnsley, but I probably would have been saying the same thing. I said it a few weeks back. I like our plan A. I like what our plan A is. I don't really want to change from our plan A. And I am still very disappointed that today we've gone out. We've obviously tried to be more defensive, haven't we? And we've still conceded 2 goals. So would we have conceded 3-4 goals if we'd have stuck with our plan A and played the 4-2-3-1? I'm not sure that we would have. So why are we changing? Why are we not just sticking to what we are good at? Because I think that it's actually affecting a lot more of the players on the pitch, which I'll definitely come into when we discuss those later on.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Ash. I think Ferguson's management of Hayes, the last couple of games have been a bit weird because he's obviously come into the team and done really, really well. He's probably been our best player across December, I would say. So then to drop him out of the team, obviously for the Barnsley game, and then to put him at left wing back today did feel a little bit harsh, almost like it definitely had a negative impact on Hayes' performance. He looked at sea. He was partly at fault for the second goal, giving the ball away in an odd area, and it just didn't play to his strengths at all. So yeah, it was a bit of a shame to see his sort of performance levels dip, but I don't blame him at all for that. So what I would like to do now is just focus on the positive. So basically that eradicates talking about the entire back line. I do want to give a quick mention to Archie Collins, who I thought was very good today, both going forward and defensively. I thought he took his goal well. I thought his passing was good. I thought it was a leader's performance, more so than Kyprianou, despite Kyprianou wearing the armband. I thought Collins really stood up and was counted for today. So I did want to focus on him. And I guess the other one is Con Clark. I enjoyed Con Clark's performance a lot. I thought it wasn't perfect. There were still areas of his game that need to be refined. And I think that's understandable given the level that he's come from and the lack of first team football that he's had so far. But I really enjoyed seeing him constantly show for possession. And how good was it to see a number 10 that was taking shots from the edge of the area that weren't going 20 yards over the bar or looking like he's stretching to shoot with Joel Randle's flawed technique. I did enjoy Conclark's performance today. I thought, like I say, it wasn't all perfect. His final ball wasn't perfect, but two assists, really good from that in that sense. And I just thought he showed a spark that I don't see enough from Randle. When you're that number 10, I always want them to be the most creative player on the pitch. And it's rare that I think Joel Randle looks like our biggest attacking threat. He normally looks good alongside when the other attackers play well. I thought Conclark today looked our biggest attacking threat. I thought he demanded play. I thought a lot of our play went through him. And like I said, it didn't all come off, but he did a lot of things that I like from a number 10 and what I wanted to see. So it was a really encouraging performance for me for Conclark. And I like the fact that he lasted 90 minutes and his performance didn't really dip too much. So his fitness levels are getting better. And I really hope that he can keep that standard up because there was a lot to like about it, I thought.
Yeah, John, I think I'm going to disagree with you. And I know that obviously when we sent our ratings into the group, they came as a shock. But I wasn't really that impressed with Conclark's performance. I've already said to you all once today that obviously one of the assists is a little bit of a stat pad assist. I think that I probably could have played that pass to Archie Collins. And then you are relying on Archie Collins to put the ball into the back of the net. Don't get me wrong, the cross for Manny's goal was good, but that was probably the 10th corner that we'd had in the game. And while we're pissing around taking short corners when we've got four absolute giants on the pitch, I just do not understand it. And ultimately, you can do all of these things in training, but he's the one that's on the pitch. He's got to be making those decisions. And I'd be whipping the ball into the box and finding one of those four behemoths that we've got to head the ball into the back of the net. I sent a diagram. I can do my best to explain it, which I'll try and do now. But I think that the difference between Randle and Conclark is that Conclark fills the space out wide. And sometimes he's then filling other people's space. Whereas Randle, he is in the middle of the pitch. He takes it, he receives it, he gives it back, gives it away, moves. And then he's like 2 points of a triangle in that he's always buzzing around and moving. And it's going to sound a little bit hypocritical because I said that I like that Malik is selfish, but I didn't like that Conclark was maybe a little bit selfish today. So it was quite frustrating for me in that I felt that I saw that there was better options. Obviously, I'm standing in a completely different place. I'm not moving around on the pitch and all of those sort of stuff. So I think that obviously, like you say, there's definitely a player in there, but I am going to go back on all of these nasty things that I've said about Joel Randle. And I'm going to admit that I think that I've missed him on the pitch the last two games. And I would actually like to see him come back because I was discussing it with some of my other mates. And I said him, Kyprianou and Collins were basically probably considered one of the top three midfield sets last season. And we're so far away from that. But actually, we've got to give them a chance to get back to that so that we can start ticking again. And I would like to see Conclark play. But I do think that he's still got quite a lot of learning to do, definitely in this setup.
Well, for me, I thought Conclark done okay. I think he's done enough to keep his place for Saturday. I don't think Randle should come back in yet. I do see where you're coming from, though, Ash, with Randle. And I think we've all said it before that Randle technically has the ability to be a very, very good player, but he's just... All right, it's a time and a place, a bit of a luxury player, a bit like Maddison used to be, was a luxury player. But when you need the battlers and the people to get stuck in, Randle ain't that play, that sort of person, where Conclark is happy to put a boot in and, you know, fight back, track back for the team. So I'd be happy for Conclark to go again on Saturday. Moving forward on the pitch, Malik and Ricky, they're having some pretty shocking games of late. The pair of them, I don't think they've been very good at all. I thought Malik was poor again today. But what I'm not happy about is, you know, the reaction that we give our players when they get subbed. We'll talk about the fans in a bit. But, you know, whilst players wear a shirt, you know, support them during the play, don't boo them. It's just not right. But, you know, it's not working for them at the moment. It will come good. So I don't really know who to talk about in the team because nobody sort of shone for me and nobody was shit, if that makes sense. There was some average and there's some below average. So overall, we are where we are with the players.
Yeah, I think I want to go back to your point on Muddersfield, Dale, because I think it is important that we touch on it more as a podcast, because I don't like that reaction that he got from the fans today. I thought it was particularly harsh to scapegoat a player that, yeah, his form has dropped. His form has certainly dropped since Pocky went out of the team. And I think having sort of being the secondary attacker, which Muddersfield was where he shone, because a lot of the defensive focus was on stopping Pocky, right? You stop Pocky, you stop Posh. Without Pocky, a lot of that has shifted onto Muddersfield's shoulders. And he's been changed into a position which he's been relatively unfamiliar with more recently, playing up front as a more central striker rather than off the wing. And yeah, he hasn't played particularly well. However, I thought today he kept showing for the ball. He kept trying. I don't think it was a question of attitude. He got things wrong. He's a 20-year-old lad, you know, played a lot of football this season. We talk about Oscar Valin as being an excuse. A lot of people I've seen doing that and saying, you know, he's played so much football in Sweden and come over, and that's a reason. Well, Maddox played something like 56 games over 2024, I think it was. One of the top in terms of appearances over the entire calendar year across the Football League. So he has played a lot of football. And I like Malik's attitude. I've always said that. I always feel like I'm defending him. But I just think a lot of people forget he's 20. And what I do think we're in danger of here is... But Malik's contract's nearly up. And I think we're in danger of basically forcing a talented player out, a talented young player out, who may not be the finished article yet. And he may not be the perfect League One striker yet. But he has a lot of potential, and I wouldn't want to lose him on a free transfer, effectively, because I do think, whatever you think of Muddersfield, I think he's shown sparks of real quality this season. I don't think anyone can dispute that. I think he's been badly treated, actually, and I think, and this isn't a hindsight thing, this is something that I text in the group chat, which I mentioned at the time, but the media team really should take some ownership of what happened today. I really don't think they've done our own player a favour in that sense, because what they did was they, and I don't want to seem like we're jumping on the media team at all here. I don't want this to seem like a massive criticism of them, but I think what they did was a little bit naive in the sense that they published that interview and they clipped it down, which was actually a really good interview with Malik. I thought the 50 minutes, if you listen to it, he comes across really well in the whole thing. But he said at the time that he wanted to win the Ballon d'Or, or he thinks he can win the Ballon d'Or. That's his aim. That's his ambition. Look, the chances of Muddersfield winning the Ballon d'Or, I would say, are slim. However, to put that on social media, and a divisive player, and he is a divisive player, I think there's a strong opinion either way on Muddersfield. He's not somebody that all the fans love or all the fans hate. I think he's got sort of sections across the fan base who really like him and sections that don't. And all that did was used as basically bait for the people that don't like him to criticize him. You see it on Twitter today. Oh, the Ballon d'Or winner can't score against Burton, Ballon d'Or winner. All the club did there was basically hang their own player out to dry, because there was no, it wasn't Pocku saying it, where everyone thinks he's a brilliant player. No one's going to use that against Kwame Pocku. It was Muddersfield, who's not the perfect player, not the star player in the team. And for me, that's really brought a focus onto Muddersfield's performances ever since he kind of said that. And some of the blame does lie with Muddersfield. He does bring it on himself with some of the stuff he does on Twitter and social media. But the club need to look introspectively and think, was that the right thing to do? They kind of used him as engagement bait, and it's backfired massively now. And now I think we're looking at a situation where we've probably got a young lad very low on confidence, a 20-year-old kid in his first real full season of playing regular first team football. And yeah, I just think it's been really handled pretty poorly by both the club and then the supporters today. Just don't cheer off your own. I didn't like it when United fans did it to Joshua Zirkzee, when, you know, I don't care about United, but I just think it's your own player. Just what are you getting out of doing that? You're not helping your team. It's never going to have a good impact. And like I say, Muddersfield has been one of our better players this season. He's not been as bad as a lot of the defenders. So to jump on his back today, I just thought was really harsh. And I think it's a problem that sort of the club need to take some ownership of, and probably think that they may have created their own problem with that.
No, I completely agree, John. And when you sort of think back to when his Posh Unfiltered podcast was released, within a week or so, I think we had a behind the scenes and a day in the life with Malik Muddersfield. So it was almost like you knew everything about him. He'd answered every question. He's done every first and last. And then we followed him around for a day. And we've seen his morning routines and all of that sort of stuff. And he is, it seems like, a confidence player. But he also needs the chance to do things wrong. But unfortunately, he's not being afforded that now. If I think about when you think about Poku 2 years ago, how many times he did a foot roll and it didn't come off or he misplaced a pass. Now look what we've got 2 years down the line. When you think about Ricky and you and me, John, we talk a lot of the same things about these players. It's not that they need defending, but ultimately somebody's got to appreciate what they do, because it just seems like the fan base is so desperate for people to fail time and time again that they're not given the chance to do things wrong. It's like you sign these players, and yes, he's come from Chelsea. Cool, fantastic. But he's not Erling Haaland, let's say, who ultimately has probably had not a great season by his own standards. You've got to give these players, they're League One footballers, you've got to give them the chance to do things wrong and to fail, because that's what makes them better. When we talk about the fans, I'm not going to say that I enjoyed watching Malik go off the pitch. I think that it was really harsh, but it felt like there was definitely some bruised egos in that terrace today. Lots of teenagers maybe given the runaround around Burton, from what I've seen on social media, that maybe had their pride damaged a little bit. So they wanted to go after some of our footballers. Now, you won't have seen this because it probably wasn't on the stream, but Bilo was doing some left foot kicking practice in what was into the wind and across the wind, and he was kicking them and they weren't going where they wanted to. We're basically cheering and going when the ball goes out of pitch. Now, why are we trying to? That's two players now that we're trying to ruin today. We get into the game and we've got fans saying that DMAC doesn't care about the club. But I watched a 6-minute video last night of him basically saying how much he does care and how much he's happy to admit that things haven't gone right. So we've got DMAC coming on Sunday. And between myself, John and Charlie, we are going to ask the difficult questions, but what we're not going to do is slag the bloke off, because none of us ultimately want DMAC out. I don't see there being a better option for somebody to own the club. But for people to start saying things like that, he doesn't care about the club, it's just ultimately baffling. And I think that what we had today was a bunch of kids that wanted to be like, oh yeah, look, I'm the hard one in the group. Yeah, I've just been run around and shit my pants around Burton City Centre. But you know what? I'm gonna beef myself up again in front of all my mates and sing about some players and boo them and jeer them, which is not what we need. We are what, four or five points off the relegation zone? Now more than ever is the time to come together. You think about how often we got the team over the line last season in those tight games, in those nitty-gritty games. Now, they probably don't have the confidence to express themselves on the pitch because they're just so concerned about what's going to come and the backlash that's going to come. And it's really frustrating. And look, we're guilty of that as well because we criticise. But as we've said, and I've said, and people have said, like, we come on here, we do it, we talk. I put a face to my comments. There's lots of people that are happy to make their comments over Twitter and then disappear again when somebody calls them out for it. We're not perfect. The Posh media team aren't perfect. The fan base isn't perfect. But I think that we are in a really rotten place as a fan base. And ultimately, I'm really concerned because if this does go south, and there is still a chance that it could do, I don't think it will, but there is a chance, and we do get into a relegation battle, that's what we don't think that we've got the players. We don't think that the players have got the confidence to do it. And actually, sometimes what saves these teams is their fans and the strength of their fan base urging them on and that every single point. I've seen somebody tweet today that today was probably a good point. 2-0 down. I wouldn't have expected a posh team of this season to have come back from 2-0 down and drawn the game, especially not how they've been in the last sort of month. But yeah, look, I don't want to rant, but I'm looking forward to Sunday evening and asking hopefully what DMAC sees as some difficult questions, that's for sure.
Fair enough, to be fair. You just literally echoed everything I was going to say about the fans, and you know, and it's not all of the youngsters. I think we've got to remember it's not all of the youngsters. We've got some proper switched on youth, as in like younger, early teens, etc. That you know want the team to succeed, and they're not all sort of we can't rub them all. paint them all with the same brush, because there are some very good ones, there are some bad ones. But what we need to do is to just keep going and encourage. On the DMACC thing, now there's questions, why aren't you on it, who ain't on it? Now, I think it's fair to say, I think we just need to cut a few things here, that the reason all seven of us ain't going to be on the pod is because, you know, we all know Darrow will talk. There'll be some of us just sat here like doing fuck all, and it'll look a bit uncomfortable. So the reason we've only chose three people is so it can be a structured, concise, you know, decent show. We will be, the guys on it will be asking the right questions. And any of you out there that have got the questions that you want us to ask, email us. Direct messages. Just ask us what you want doing. Later on the thingy, we'll put what the email address is so you can put the questions out there. But, you know, we're not going to be rude to the bloke. I'm not a big fan of Darrow, and I've made that clear over the years. But I'm going to start fucking effing and blinding at him again. Done it once before. It is what it is. So, you know, be respectful. Get your questions in and make sure that they are fucking some hard questions, and he will answer them. No doubt about that. I've been asked three or four times today, oh, has Darrow already sent you a list of what you can do, what you can't do? No, he hasn't. It is a fucking blank sheet. I know I'm going right off of it. It's a blank sheet. We can't, there's nothing that we've got to hold back. There's no pre-script or anything. It is literally alive as you see it, as Eric comes. So get your questions in, okay? And, you know, make sure you're listening.
Well, I was going to do that at the end, Dale, but you've done it for me. So just to confirm, that's Sunday at 7 o'clock this Sunday. Worth noting as well, Dale said you can email your questions in. You can also tweet us out or get in the YouTube comments as the stream's going on, and we'll pick some of the best ones out, obviously, if you want to do it that way rather than email us in beforehand, that's fine too. Yeah, without further ado, we'll move on, because it is the 1st of January as we're recording, which means the transfer window is open. Posh look like they're going to be active. Pretty much all the sounds from within the club are that we're going to be active. How many transfers do you think we need? How many signings do you think we're going to get? Ash, I'm going to ask both of those predictions to you first.
Well, we know that we've got one through the door, don't we? In Gustav Lindgren. Now, I am concerned, because if the standard of scoring 15 goals in the Swedish league is just having to score 15 goals against somebody that is Oscar Wallin's level, that he's shown so far, then do you know what? I probably could score 10. Now, look, I don't want to write him off before he started, but I'm hoping that he's definitely going to be more a Britt Assombalonga, Dwight Gale than a Lee Angell, Tom Nichols type player. That's one through the door. I'm not sure where he fits in at the moment, because Ricky and Malik, yes, although they've not been fantastic, I still think you have to start both of them, because they are probably our biggest threat going forwards when they can get it right. Today was tough for them. The last few games have been tough for them because they've been manhandled and bullied out of the game. But, you know, maybe he makes a good impact serve along with Bradley Ihonfjorden as well, who was decent today. We definitely need a centre-back. That's something that I've never been more certain of. So I think that we probably only need like one or two. And two's probably pushing the boat out a little bit too far as well. When we think about that Sissoko's coming back from injury as well in January, that'll be like a fresh signing. So then you're talking about, well, yeah, actually, we've sort of made three in a sense. So I think that the number one priority, and probably the only priority now, needs to be that we get a centre-back or two. Obviously, Fergie's interview said that he's definitely getting rid of some players in January. Sounds like he's absolutely sick of them. You've got to imagine that they're defenders that he's talking about. I think I'm going to probably confidently say that we only need one signing, and that needs to be a centre-back that's probably a 27, 28-year-old. And then we call it quits.
I think you're being very generous to say we only need one signing, Ash. Look, I think we have to sort of change expectations this season, and probably what we need to ensure in January now is we don't go down rather than we build a playoff squad. I think to feel assured of that, I would like three new signings in through the door at least. If I'm honest, I think we need four. I think we need a right back. I think we need a left back. And I think we need two centre backs, because I just don't have any faith in any position across that back four. But I think most urgently is a left back. Jack Sparks isn't up to it. Look, Harley Mills might become a great left back in time. I don't think he's up to it at the minute. And if you're using Kieran Hayes as your left wing back, I think that shows where you are in you know, your desperate attempts to try and get something that works. At right back, you've got Dornelli, not really nailed the play. Sam Curtis should be sent back to Sheffield United. I still don't really know why he was playing today. I just don't see it with him. And then your centre backs, for me, we could probably, if you're asking, can we stay above the relegation zone? I think you can probably do that with Manny Fernandez and an experienced player alongside him. I don't really want to see Oscar Vallin play too many more games this season. George Nevitt, I think, has a lot of potential. I don't want to really want to see him playing another 20 games this season. I don't think he's quite a League One standard just yet. So those are the three key signings. And if we don't make them, I am becoming concerned, because we're just leaking way, way too many goals. I really think there's a importance on getting that experienced centre-back, getting a good right-back, getting a good left-back. And if you get that basis to build from, I'm pretty convinced we end up in mid-table.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've gone on the assumption that everybody stays. If we start seeing people leave and that are playing and have been playing in the last couple of weeks, then don't get me wrong, what we've got in backup and in waiting isn't strong enough to probably help us stay above the drop. So, yeah, we will absolutely need to be going in. If we lose the likes of Ricky, Poku, Kipriano, we'll need to be going into the market and getting some strong replacements. And I'm not going to say that I would enjoy those players leaving, but maybe it is time to freshen it up slightly, in a sense, and bring some like experience throughout the pitch. There's got to be some people on the market that can help us and really grab this by the scruff of the neck. He wasn't a fantastic footballer, but somebody like Ollie Norburn would probably really, really suit this team at the moment, and would just really grab everybody and drag them all up. And like, I'm not going to put words into somebody's mouth and comment on somebody because I don't know the bloke, but I don't think he was the nicest, but maybe that's probably what we need now. We need somebody that's not going to be nice and is not going to pussyfoot around the players, because it's clearly not working and Fergie's getting pissed off, and there's only so much that Fergie can do and be angry at them. He's already accused them of not paying attention when they're doing drills today in his interview. So, yeah, I think it now needs to come from people on the pitch, but only if people are out the door.
Cool. We'll move on then. We've got our podcast friends at Wrexham as our next game for Posh. We obviously created some very early on in this podcast life. We created some controversy, I would say, which seemed to get us onto Wrexham's official Twitter account after they beat us. I think Charlie, who isn't on tonight, predicted that Posh were going to win 5-1. Ash said that Wrexham fans were getting bored of watching their team, and then they kind of humbled us. And we got some interesting comments, let's say, from the famous Welsh towns of Nebraska and Nevada and Toronto and Vancouver. All the Welsh people were coming for us after our comments about them. So we're going to move on, and we're probably going to have very different predictions about this Wrexham game to the last one, I would expect anyway. Ash, are you making any changes as we go there?
To the team? Yes, I'd like to see us go back to the 4-2-3-1 for me. I think that's probably where we're going to have our best success against a team like Wrexham. The flip side is, I don't think we've actually got a fucking chance in hell. I think that they're so well drilled, and we just are not well drilled at all, are we? I'm not going to pretend to think that we're going to go there and we're going to absolutely spank them. I think that it will be a loud atmosphere. I don't think it's a sellout just yet. So, you know, maybe I was right. Maybe they're not enjoying it as much as they think that they are. But I mean, they've lost to Barnsley today. Barnsley was shit. I think the Wrexham are going to come out. First game at home this year, aren't they? And they're going to come all guns blazing. And I think that it could be a little bit of a massacre, unfortunately, and probably not the best way to go into a week where we've got another big game against Everton on the Thursday night.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to going to watch Wrexham, who are in Wales, for an EFL fixture. EFL, is that the English Football League? Nothing against Wrexham or Newport or Cardiff or any of those. I just don't think Welsh, by my view. And for quite a long time, they weren't, to be fair, but there we are. So as far as the changes, I think... I'm with you, Ash. I'd go back to what the players are comfortable with. Even though we're shit at it, let's go back to the four at the back, you know, and the one up top. That's where we're playing to us the strengths we have from scoring goals, from Ricky up the front, from Malik on out on the wing. So I would go back to that. Who plays in different positions, I really don't know, mate, to be fair. Although I would still play Con Clark, let him have another game. I think we're going to get battered as well. I generally think we will. We'll do the scores in a bit, but it's one of them where we're playing really shit and we're not playing well. Even today, we wasn't great, but we was better. Wrexham have been, I wouldn't say they've been really good. They're drilled, as you said, drilled. They're consistent. They're good at what they do, you know, without being as outstanding. So, it's going to be a tough game, whatever way you look at it. But it's one of them games where it could be an upset. You know, I can't believe we're saying that we're going to beat Wrexham is going to be a fucking upset. You know, that's not how it should be. But it could be an upset by us beating them. Who knows? But let's go. Let's go up there. It's a long drive. You know, three away games on a spin today. Fucking Saturday. Then Thursday back up to Everton. I don't like the northeast too. Northeast, northwest, whatever way you want to look at it. But at least Everton's in England, I suppose.
I mean, some stats about Wrexham. Let's get away from pissing the Welsh crowd off too much. Unbeaten at home all season. Best home record in League One. Posh haven't won away in 7 matches now. All the stats point towards a home win, and as much as I'd love to argue otherwise, I think it's going to be a real struggle. I'm probably sticking to 5 at the back. I think Wrexham, we all know what they're going to do. They're going to go long. They're going to be direct. They're going to ask questions from crosses. They're going to be physical. I think having that third centre back probably is important. I would play Katongo over Valin. I don't think Katongo's been great, but I just can't watch another game of Oscar Valin at the back. Please stop the experiment now. I would be tempted for Sparks over Hayes, which doesn't fill me with great joy saying that. I would rather watch Hayes play football, but I thought he struggled defensively today, and then it becomes a bit more of a concern in a game where we're going to be on the back foot a little bit more. And if we're sticking with 5 at the back, I'm not sure if there's a natural role for him in that system. And I think Bradley probably deserves a start up front, to be honest. I thought he made a positive impact off the bench. I don't actually mind if he comes in for Ricky or Malik. I would probably start him with Ricky because I feel like having that sort of target man present that Ricky can work off potentially at Wrexham, where they might well come onto us a little bit and maybe we can feed off that and use Ricky's pace to get in behind there. They're slower back line. I don't think it's too harsh to say that. They do have some pace in it, but it's more of an aging team. So maybe Ricky can get some joy out of that. So I do think I'd start Brad probably over Mothersill. But if Fergie would rather start Mothersill and drop Ricky, I don't think either of them could have too many complaints. We're going to move to predictions now. All the talk between the three of us hasn't been the most positive. So Ash, what scoreline are you going for?
I'd just like to say, because they will all be watching, but one of the team goal that they scored against us, I can't remember who that scored it, they're not going to just play long balls. And that concerns me. The ability to switch it up is so good because you get into that rhythm, don't you? And it's similar to cricket, isn't it? You're bowling over and you've got 5 outswingers and then the 6th one swings in. And then you knock the stumps over, don't you? And that's sort of the way that Wrexham play. And that does all come down to how well drilled they are. Now, I really, really hope that we can go there and this 20-game unbeaten run that they've had at home just gets demolished. And this bogey that we've had since like Exeter away must have been our last away win, wasn't it, in the league, in that we can go and get rid of that bogey. My head says we haven't got a fucking cat in hell's chance. My heart, however, says that at some point, this young team has to click. They have to get it right. So I'm going to give you two predictions, John. My head says that we go there, we get pumped, we lose 4-0. My heart says that we win 3-2.
I'm just need to say about the Welsh people. I know I've just criticised that Wrexham shouldn't be in the English Football League. I will stand by that all day long. It's like, you know, the Scottish clubs, they should never come down to England for whatever reason. Nothing against you boys. You know, you've got a good following, got a good little pub, and you've got a good little documentary and everything, which is great. You know, so, you know, kudos and fair play to that. However, I ain't going to do two predictions. I'm just going to go straight in. All right. I think we're going to get fucking smashed. I ain't going to lie. I think we're going to get battered. So based on that, I'm actually going to go for a 3-1 Posh win. Man, I've got, I can't go against us not winning. I can't. I could go for a draw, but it ain't going to be a draw. I'm going to go for a, 3-1. Fucking hell, 3-1 to Peterborough. I bet the odds on that will be pretty good.
Yeah, lads. I mean, I think we've got 72 hours to sign a centre-back. If we do that, I might change this prediction. But I think it feels like lambs going to the slaughter this. This is not pretty. I can't see any way we win this football match, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think it's going to be a bit of a massacre. They do everything that we don't like playing against. They press high. They're physical. I'm going to go 4-1 Wrexham. I'll give us a goal. I really hope I'm surprised. But almost the reverse, Chaz. I'll go with the 4-1 Wrexham this time and hope it has the same impact that Charlie's 5-1 Peterborough prediction had earlier in the season, and we spring a massive surprise. But God, it's going to be a miracle if we do that. With that, we're at the end of the episode. A slightly shorter one tonight. The big one is Sunday. We did mention it earlier. Dara is coming on. If there is any Wrexham fans listening and you want to hear what the chairman has to say after whatever result comes on Saturday, please do tune in. That is 7 p.m. We're going to be live on YouTube and Twitter. As Dale said, there's no pre-rehearsed questions. There's nothing. We're going in blank script. We're going to try and get to the bottom of what's gone wrong this season for Posh. We're not going to ask. Well, I might ask Darryl what his favourite topping on a pizza is, but certainly we're not going to focus on that. We are going to ask the tough questions. Consider us Jeremy Paxman and whoever else asks tough questions on national television. And we'll hopefully do you all proud, and it'll be an insightful chat with the chairman. 7 p.m. See you there. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast. You know what? Wow, is that fucking bad? Even Ness is leaving.